From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
It's a privilege for me to be here. I love Illinois. This is home, and boy, I'm a feisty guy. You mess with my home, Speaker Madigan. You mess with my home. You picked a fight with the wrong guy. You have picked a fight with the wrong guy.
We are willing to work with Governor Rauner, but we don't work for Governor Rauner.
The Republican Party is strong. We're coming back. We're going to become a two-party state again and restore the principles that make Illinois great.
Why am I here to thank Bruce Rauner? Look around you. The Democratic Party has never been as organized and as energized as it is right now.
Freak shows at the Illinois State Fair? Oh, they don't have those anymore. I'm sorry. It was political days at the Illinois State Fair. And we'll be talking about the topics that were discussed at those political days on this week's State Week. The Republicans hosted Governor's Day, the first time they've had that designation in over a decade, and Democrats rallied at the fairgrounds a day later. I'm Bill Wheelhouse, our panel on State Week. Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Amanda Venicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio. And our guest this week, Becky Schlickerman, a reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times. Becky, we appreciate you stopping off to chat with us while you're in Springfield this week.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll start, Amanda Venicky, you've been covering now the State House for a decade or better, but this was the first time you've gone to the Illinois State Fair when the Republicans had Governor's Day.
And let me tell you, Bill, Republicans were pretty pumped up about that. There were a ton of them out at the state fairgrounds cheering, hooting, and hollering for Governor Bruce Rauner. I tried to ask, it's, you know, a lot of committee chairs, party faithful, what do you think about this budget impasse? Is that giving you a different perspective on your governor, the man who promised he was going to come in and shake up state government and use his business acumen and leadership skills to set things right? And instead, we are well into August with no plans of finishing the month with a budget resolution. Don't you blame this guy and his leadership skills at all? No, they said. They all, every single one that I talked to, followed just what we heard from Bruce Rauner there. They said it's Mike Madigan's fault.
Mike Madigan has heard that through the years. What seemed to be his response?
Well, Madigan, you know, Democrats had their day on Thursday at the fairgrounds, and we can talk later about, actually, the fairground event itself was quite sparse, but they had probably 700 or so people at their breakfast fundraiser on Thursday morning. He had a chance to briefly speak with Speaker Madigan about it, and he said, hey, I've been hearing that. I get it. This isn't the point. I'm willing to work cooperatively with the governor. So he didn't really take the bait, if that's in fact what it was, in any way, shape, or form. He did say during his speech, we've taken this verbal slinging, we've gotten this criticism, but our, how he characterized it, as support for the middle class families is, quote, unwavering.
And we also heard that, and it's probably not the first time it's been said either, that we heard that the House Speaker had ice water in his veins, according to the governor.
We did ask him about that comment. And, you know, the Speaker Madigan said he wasn't going to take the bait. Like Amanda said, he just said, this isn't going to help the process. This name calling isn't going to help solve what he called the number one crisis, which is the budget deficit.
And, you know, he kind of gets that little, I don't know how you call it, smile slash smirk on his face when you give him that those comments.
You're talking about the speaker here?
The speaker, pardon me, yeah. You know, and Bruce Rauner really has kept it up, though. And I think part of that is because in this battle, when you don't have a budget, it's politically for the public at large a blame game. So the more that Rauner can place it on Speaker Madigan and not on himself, the better he looks to his constituency. Madigan doesn't have to run for election statewide. That's something that the governor pointed out. He said, why does this guy have so much power? He's elected by, you know, however many, 17,000 people. I've got millions of people who sent me to Springfield. I should be the one in power. And of course, there's plenty that we can read into that. But point being that Madigan doesn't have to worry so much about his popularity statewide. He has to worry about his popularity with members. And so far, they are sticking with him. And Republicans, and I'm sure we'll get to this, all but at least one, have really stuck with Rauner throughout this impasse.
I'm sure Barack Obama has had that opinion about John Boehner as well.
If I could play devil advocate for a moment, I think the governor insisting that Madigan is the root of all evil kind of ignores the history. And as I suggested before we began recording this show, my guess is that former Senate President Pate Phillip, a Republican from DuPage County, probably wouldn't agree with the characterization that Mike Madigan ran everything during the 10 years that he was Senate president. And I think if you were to go back and talk to the Republican governors with whom Madigan worked in a cooperative fashion to get important things done, Jim Thompson, Jim Edgar, George Ryan, I don't think they felt that Madigan was calling all the shots. I mean, this rewriting of history, that's fine on the campaign trail. Unfortunately, the governor hasn't seemed to get off the campaign trail yet. You expected that at the state fair. Yeah, that's when all this political rhetoric and all this nonsense gets thrown around to energize the troops. But at some point, you actually have to be the governor. And I think Cullerton put it very well, Senate President John Cullerton. We don't work for the governor. We work with the governor. The governor heads most of one branch of Illinois government. He doesn't head the Secretary of State's office. He doesn't head the Attorney General's office and so on. He does not head the General Assembly. Michael Madigan heads the House. John Cullerton heads the Senate. And it's got to be a cooperative arrangement. It can't be one guy trying to dictate terms. And I think coming from the private sector, that's something that maybe the governor hasn't grasped quite yet.
You know, it is interesting because that has been thought of as a sore spot for Senate President John Cullerton, that he's, you know, seen as perhaps less powerful than Speaker Madigan, although really his majorities in his chamber are greater and larger than that of Michael Madigan's. He also has a very long tenure in the General Assembly, not obviously so long as the Senate's top guy, but nonetheless, he's been around. And so in a way, you feel like Rauner, by saying that Cullerton is under Madigan's thumb, is trying to poke Cullerton, at least publicly. But it doesn't seem to have worked. Cullerton and Madigan continue to say their relationship is just fine. And, you know, Cullerton didn't have much of a response when asked about that. I will add, though, kind of to play devil's advocate to Charlie's devil's advocate, that there are plenty of people, I think, who would say that, sure, you know, obviously there's a Senate, there's a House, Madigan doesn't tell everybody what to do. But as Rauner has been accused of keeping up with the campaigning constantly, that has long been the thought of, really, that's all Madigan does. That you can look back at his legacy and what has been accomplished, his number one goal, not so much getting the state in the right order or dealing with education funding or, you know, pick a policy issue, but it's maintaining control of the House and getting members of the House elected. And you take that, and really, by extension, that's campaigning, just not as such an overt fashion.
Well, and I would add that from my experience of observing Michael Madigan over the years, another one of his main concerns has been to protect the city of Chicago from the people, if you will, the barbarians at the ranks who try and destroy the institutions of the city. Going back many, many years when council wars was going on in Chicago, the white ethnic aldermen fighting the allies in city council of Mayor Harold Washington, some of that enmity started to creep down into Springfield. There was legislation introduced that would strip powers from the mayor, give them to the city council. Madigan put a kibosh on all of that. He said, that's not going to happen. He supported the mayor. He supports the office of the mayor. So I think his legacy is more than just making sure he elects Democrats to the Senate. It's also a very traditionalist approach of protecting the institutions of government, be they the city of Chicago, the powers of the office of the mayor, or be it the legislature itself and its prerogatives when other branches of government try to step on it, so to speak.
And I just wanted to add in that conversation, it's going back a couple of minutes now, you know, when they were saying all those years of Mike Madigan, Charlie mentioned, well, Pate Phillip did have control. And you can pretty much say, at least back in 97 or so, Pate Phillip single-handedly blocked a school funding overhaul from going through. And there would have been a lot that wouldn't have necessarily had the political backbone to do that at the time, I think.
Well, it was basically the interesting thing in my mind was that it was Republican Governor Jim Edgar who requested this tax increase that would have provided money to reduce dollar for dollar school districts' property tax levies and at the same time provide something like $600 million for poor school districts. The bill came out of the House with Madigan providing the vast majority of votes. There were only like half a dozen Republicans who voted for it. It came over to the Senate, and it died in committee. And I would say if Jim Edgar were a guest on the show right today, and if we were to ask him, had that bill reached the Senate floor, would it have passed? He'd say yes. He had the votes, but he couldn't get it out of the committee, and Pate Phillip blocked it because he thought it was bad for his constituents in DuPage County who would wind up having to pay higher income taxes and not get a whole lot of the additional state aid for their schools because they were already pretty well funded.
And of course, we're still having this education funding decision now. That is all a part of this budget impasse and this struggle between the state and the CPS. And a key takeaway here is that no matter who you are as leader, Illinois does have very strong legislative leaders and a strong governor's office as well.
And we'll move in just a moment down to the Capitol, where some action did take place later on Republican Day as the Senate convened. But I'd be interested, both Becky and Amanda, just in your thoughts of what were the most important things or notable things politically that took place at either political day, whether it be the Governor's Day or the Democrat Day.
You know, I think Democrats Day, there was a whole lot of focus on the U.S. Senate race that is coming up next year. You had at least four Democrats who got up on the podium and made speeches. There's in kind of setting up a battle there within the party. You have Dick Durbin, who's endorsing Tammy Duckworth, Andrea Zopp, who Becky can further talk about. I'm sure she was on the Chicago Public Schools Board and had the Chicago Urban League. That, for example, State Senator Kwame Raoul and others say that maybe Durbin jumped the gun a little bit by endorsing Duckworth. She's the best candidate. And then there's also this potential spoiler, who knows, in Richard Boykin, Cook County Commissioner, and now State Senator Napoleon Harris saying he wants to get in there. Further, you also heard competing speeches from State Senator Daniel Biss and Chicago City Clerk Susana Mendoza, who are both trying to get the comptroller position from Leslie Munger. Again, Munger, a day before on Republican Day, she's the one that took the office because Judy Bartapinka had, you know, won it in last year's election and then unfortunately, of course, passed away before she was sworn in. And so Rauner chose Munger. Some people took notice of Munger's remarks that she considered herself a wingman for Bruce Rauner, and Democrats use that as an opportunity to get in there and say, hey, we're not going to be anybody's wingman or wingwoman. This is an independent office, and we won't take our cues from somebody who appointed us. That's why they wanted to win an election. So a little bit more there on the election front. I'll let Becky add some other takeaways.
And in the Republican Day, one notable absence was Senator Mark Kirk, who was advertised to be at the fair event and then skipped it. His office said he had a briefing on the Iran deal and it couldn't be scheduled for any other day, but his absence was notable. There weren't any signs for his campaign. People weren't wearing his shirts in droves, so he was definitely missing from the event.
Well, certainly with the crowd, holding the governor's mansion does seem to help you attract a good crowd at your event. Now, on that Republican day, there were some protesters, union protesters outside, were there not?
There were. They came in from Chicago. They were affiliated with SEIU, and they were protesting the cuts in services that people are seeing as a result of this budget impasse. And there were also protesters, I believe, at the governor's mansion earlier in the day.
Yeah, so, I mean, there were protesters, and you could hear them as Republicans were trying to make their speeches, but it was by no means the amount of protesters that we have seen in years past, or I guess in some ways you would maybe expect at an event like this, and given the animosity between unions and the governor and Rauner's cuts. Perhaps that may be because we have, as well, I'm sure, talk about this arbitration bill going on. Who knows where that'll go? That there will be opportunity aplenty for further protests.
So we go to the state capitol later the same day of Governor's Day, and the Illinois Senate voted to override the governor's veto on some labor legislation that would say if there's an impasse between the executive branch and the state's labor unions, that they would bring in an arbitrator for binding arbitration, and that there could be no lockout nor strike. And they were able to override the governor. Earlier in the show, Amanda, you alluded to the governor saying that Senator Cullerton, President Cullerton, if they voted for that particular legislation and called it, he would be under the thumb of Mike Madigan. It's now going over to Mike Madigan's chamber, and yet we don't know what will happen there.
We asked Speaker Madigan about this yesterday. He said he believes he can override the veto as well. He doesn't think it will happen next week when they're back in session. But we also asked Cullerton about the comments about him being under the speaker's thumb, and Cullerton, you know, didn't want to get into the political wrangling. He just said, you know, it was a very productive legislative session.
Well, I would think, Amanda, this would be a significant legislative victory if Democrats did override this particular measure and would take some teeth out of a part of the governor's cornerstone campaign issues.
Well, and that's, I think, why you're seeing Governor Bruce Rauner fighting so hard. There were robocalls about it, a lobbying effort to individual legislators trying to persuade them to stick with him, maybe peel off some Democrats. It's one of the things, however, that in where you heard from Bruce Rauner saying that he hopes to get a majority in the next 8 years, because he is really, of course, going to have a hard time pushing through his agenda where you get back to divided government. And Democrats have these super majorities. And Rauner says that that's because they've been bought off by special interests in unions. Democrats say, no, this is just our principles at their very heart. So, yes, it would definitely be hamstringing on Governor Bruce Rauner, because he says he has come in right away and said he wants to change the structure. He says he's promised no lockout, but unions say there's a way around that, that he can just make really harsh demands, forcing them to strike. And Rauner further has said he won't go for any cuts at all in how much people are taking home, but how much more money are they going to get? May it be that the union members will have to pay a lot more for health care under what Rauner wants? Rauner also wants a basic total restructuring, that instead of just automatically getting increases in title and pay because of longevity, he says it should be based more instead on performance. So all of that is going on. Rauner is really fighting this. It's taking away in part from, and this is, of course, a budget issue, how much you pay for your workforce. And so much of Illinois' workforce is unionized. So this is a big part of it. But would be a big loss for the governor on both of those folds, therefore, on the legislative front, as well as his abilities to push through his vision for transforming state government.
We did see one Republican senator break ranks and also vote for this measure, but he is a senator that's kind of on the outs a little bit with his own party.
Right. Senator Sam McCann of Carlinville is a Republican. He had considered making a run for governor. That didn't go over well. And McCann said that it's because he's got to vote his district. And that's one of the things I know, Charlie, you talk about a lot here. What Rauner is asking of legislators to push through his agenda and to stick with him, how much of these votes are going to perhaps hurt in the long term because voters locally don't like him. And McCann says that's what he was doing with all of the calls that came in, wanted him to vote to override the governor's veto of this arbitration bill. But I think we are going to have to watch closely what happens to McCann, whether, of course, Rauner would be expected to field a primary challenge. Will McCann be able to survive that? How much money will the governor stick into that race? And how much support, really, will McCann continue to have from his own leadership in Christine Redonio? Redonio very closely aligned now with Bruce Rauner. And when you kind of defy the governor, it's in a sense you're defying her. And so McCann may well be the example of, hey, look, if you do this, just watch and wait. It's kind of the political version. It's been said before, but it does remind you a bit of Hunger Games. You know, don't step out of line or else.
This is State Week. Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Venicky, and the Chicago Sun-Times' Becky Schlickerman are our guests. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. In addition to that particular piece of legislation that we just discussed, the Illinois Senate also went ahead and took care of the formality of approving the measure that does allow federal funding that would normally pass through state government to go ahead and pass through. That will fund some types of social and health care services. That since went to the governor's desk, and he signed that this week. Also, what other action did we see in the Illinois State Capitol building this week, Amanda?
So you saw the Senate, really, the arbitration was the big deal. They did take up another, I don't know, dozen or so of the governor's vetoes, but most of those were, not to say that they're not interesting, important to certain constituents, but no major takeaways. However, there was a bill that would fund MAP grants. Those are the low-income sort of tuition grants that the state provides to help low-income students afford going to college. And because there is no higher education budget, along with those social services, those are kind of the two outliers with everything else because of those consent decrees and such that we've been talking about previously, the state is paying for despite the budget impasse. So the Senate said, hey, these kids, they don't deserve that. Democrats voted for it, but you saw once again most Republicans voting present. Rauner says he doesn't like that measure. We've got to get to a full budget deal first and pass his turnaround agenda. Every time you get one of these votes, it's another political pressure point for Republicans. And also, should it pass, if there ever is this funding, then that takes away some extra pressure, some leverage from the governor as he tries to get his measures advanced.
The governor this week did also kind of offer up a slightly new spin on his turnaround agenda, emphasizing the property tax relief and things like that in Chicago earlier in the week.
Yeah, and it's really, in a sense, kind of the same old, same old. It's been characterized as new, but kind of just lumps everything together in one measure. Tucked in it, though, are some areas that would allow for what I've characterized as privatizing, allowing more contracting within schools. And it also does this pickup that the state will pick up the tab for Chicago public school teachers' pensions. So that was all lumped in. It's been something Rauner has gone up to Chicago, put out these measures, tried to say, hey, look, I'm trying to help and save CPS. And then Democrats say, no dice.
One of the things that I found interesting, and to the best of my knowledge, we haven't actually seen a bill yet. This is another one of the talking point agenda items for the governor. But it occurs to me, if you lump a number of different subjects into a particular piece of legislation, and if you also include actual authorization to spend money, that runs afoul of the Constitution. There's a clause in the Constitution, and I know it, I hate to get technical and be all lawyerly and all that, but there's a clause in the Constitution.
And you're not
says,
a lawyer.
No, heavens no. that in essence says you can't do what Congress does, where they bundle everything under the sink into a single package and then up or down, and you can't mix money in with substantive legislation. Now, as I say, I haven't seen the bill, and one would hope that the governor's advisors are aware enough of the Constitution that they'll be able to draft legislation that meets that requirement. But that was the first thing that went through my mind. How can you talk about appropriating money in the same bill that makes substantive changes in the law? And the governor has stressed that he doesn't want the speaker or the Senate president to break the bill into separate components. He wants an up or down vote on the entire package.
You know, it is interesting because, Charlie, the governor keeps on saying that I'm open to compromise. I'm open to compromise. And at the same time saying, take this whole bill. I don't want it changed. So you're very right, Charlie. And I think that is something that could present obvious legal issues should it get to that point. Nonetheless, I think there's kind of widespread expectation, probably even on the governor's own part, that that writing itself would not be the one that is put forward. That is, if the leaders ever get together with the governor and meet, they're still not doing it.
So then the question is, are you trying to dominate the news cycle? Are you trying to get favorable headlines? Are you trying to get favorable editorials? Or are you instead attempting to actually work out a deal so that the state can move forward? And I mean, in my judgment, it's more the former than the latter. And at some point, these people have to grow up, become statesmen, and kind of revert back to the way things used to be back in the day. And I know I keep referring to that, but that's the experience that I had in all the years I covered this stuff, where the legislature, the legislative leaders, and the governor sit down and figure out, okay, where is our common ground? Where can we reach compromise? And where will we just agree to disagree for now, so that we can actually pass a budget, actually get state government funded properly again, and move forward from there?
Take some time now in the remaining moments of the show to get some notes from the field. We'll start down at the state capitol. Amanda Vinicky.
I will take this opportunity to give a shout out to our guy from CapFax, Rich Miller, who had some health issues but is back on his feet, or at least in the golf cart. So best wishes to Rich, buddy, and to all of our other brethren in the press.
And Becky Schlickerman of the Chicago Sun-Times.
Well, the City Girl was really impressed with all the livestock at the fair, and I spent a lot of time at the piglet booth in the 4-H tent.
And so that was the one that captured your attention the most?
Yeah, I love the piglets.
Charlie Wheeler.
Well, the state reported that our unemployment rate has declined in the most recent month in July. It dropped to 5.8%, which is much improved over what it had been, say, a year ago. But officials note that we are still lagging the rest of the nation in our recovery.
That's our time for this edition of State Week. Thanks to Becky Schlickerman of the Chicago Sun-Times for stopping by today during her visit to Springfield. You can get a podcast of today's show by going to WUIS.org. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.